Straight Talk from Israel.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Soul Talk. This is Leora Mandel. I'll be joined with Rabbi David Aaron after the break. How does one go about building character? Building my inner world, the inner part of who I am, refining myself as a person, refining my character traits, and really being the best version of who I can be. Now, there's so much emphasis on educating ourselves, which is important. You know, education for life, what kind of profession am I going to go into? And we can spend years educating ourselves, especially the more complex the profession one might go into, the more learning and the more working on ourselves and striving and effort that goes into becoming. And yet, unfortunately, so often, little emphasis is placed on building the inner world, building the inner part of who I am. I live with myself, and who I am inside is manifest outward. If I tend to have a short fuse and get angry, then that's something I live with on a regular basis, this tension and this passion inside that I lose myself and lose control. But it also spills out, and those around me, unfortunately, are also experience that lacking that's within myself and within my character. The question is, can I change myself? And if I even recognize that I'd like to become more refined in certain areas of my life, I'd like to develop certain traits more than where they naturally are. How do I go about effectively doing so? Can I change certain parts of who I am? Or do I just say, this is just who I am? This is also a question I want to apply specifically to the concept of having a sense of integrity, of a moral sense of integrity, of honesty, of being honest with myself, of people knowing they can really trust me. I'm a person who's trustworthy, that is respectable, can be looked up to, that I can trust myself and respect myself for the choices that I make and the commitments that I follow through on. I think so much of society is focused on becoming more professional, becoming educated. And I'm not saying that's not important, but sometimes we don't emphasize as much the importance of inner value. And sometimes this is especially manifest when we may have a conflict of values. I can either advance myself by cheating on a test, or I can have a sense of integrity and build character inside by saying that's a temptation that I'm going to say no to because that's the wrong thing to do. I'm going to live with myself. I'm not going to compromise my value of integrity and honesty for the value of professional gain. There's so many challenges and conflicts sometimes we do come into play when it comes to building our inner self. But again, the question is, to what extent can I change who I am, build who I am? How do I go about building inner sense of self, character, and integrity? This is what I want to ask the rabbi when we return. Soul Talk, Rabbi David Aaron and Leora Mandel.
Israel is located in one of the most volatile areas in the world. Israel is an island of stability in a sea of war and unrest. In the midst of this turmoil, Israel stands out as a beacon of order and human progress. Each week we update you on what's happening in this, the Jewish state, a true light unto the nations. This is Jay Shapiro. Join me every Thursday on Israel News Talk Radio.
Welcome to Soul Talk. This is Leora Mandel with Rabbi David Aaron. Rabbi, there are so many important values that I hope are trying to instill and work on within ourselves. And if you're a parent, you're also trying to instill and work on within your children. And one of those values, although I think it is becoming rarer and rarer today, unfortunately, is that of what I'd call integrity, which I looked it up and it said it's being honest and having a strong moral principles, moral uprightness. And I personally think, and I believe the Torah really is trying to instill within us a sense of integrity, being honest, the importance of keeping your word. We, you know, have to be careful about what we say, about being honest when we speak and when we share information, and being, again, strong moral principles. And yet more and more, it seems as though the general society is oftentimes sending us contrary messages, like something that I've been, you know, thinking about recently and even noticing it almost like sometimes the value of, for example, doing well on a test or, you know, doing well, getting ahead in work, getting ahead of the game, sometimes can trump a person's sense of integrity. And the question I have is, how can we become more, open up our eyes more to really recognize that this is an important value? And how can we become more sensitive and work on instilling this within ourselves?
Well, it's not just a value, it's the value of Torah life. What's referred to as tikkun hamidot, fixing our character. Character development is the primary concern of the Torah way, and the commandments are there to serve and create a context for accomplishing that goal. But if a person thinks that they could be on one hand and dishonest, and yet on the other hand they can celebrate Shabbat, not that one detracts from the other in terms of, well, if you're not going to be honest, then don't keep Shabbat, or if you keep Shabbat, you don't need to. I don't mean that. I'm just meaning when people think that they can somehow buy off God by doing these commandments while missing the point of it all, which is to be a good person. You know, the mission statement of Judaism is what we find in the Psalms, Tov Hashem l'kol, God is good to all, Rachamav l'kol masa, His unconditional love is demonstrated to all. That's the mission statement. Our goal is to live godly, to follow in the ways of Hashem, of God, and that's the essence of it all.
So it's almost like I'm thinking the concept of having a mission statement, that the importance of a mission statement is it keeps us focused, because as much as what you're saying is our goal is to live a godly life, and part of that is these traits of godliness, part of which is honesty and, you know, integrity.
It's not part of it. It is the whole point. The only thing we know about God is what the Torah describes as the divine attributes, which is referred to in Kabbalah as the 10 sefirot, the 10 divine attributes. And our job is to embody those attributes and be a channel for their presence in the world. So, you know, so the commandments, which is to align our will with God's, to want what God wants. God wants me to celebrate Shabbat. I want to celebrate Shabbat. But the idea here is to align myself and be a channel for God's presence in the world. And the presence of God in the world is through his will and through his attributes. And so if a person is dishonest, then they're not embodying the divine attribute of truth, and that's a huge failure.
So ultimately, it's the choices that I make that help create who I am, and especially when I'm faced with a challenge in making a choice, let's say when it comes to honesty. You know, it's easier to be dishonest. I'll feel like in a certain aspect of my life, I might get ahead, and I might lose out if I'm honest, but at the end of the day, if I choose dishonesty, I'm losing out on even more than I think I've gained, because I'm losing myself. I'm no longer a reflection and a conduit for God within this world to the same extent that I was before I made that choice.
Absolutely. I mean, it goes back to clarifying our goals. What is the goal of life? The goal of life is to live in service of God. But when we say God, what do we mean? God is the personification of all good. Every ideal is a manifestation, so to speak, let's say, one of the faces of God. To serve a God would mean to serve, to bring kindness to the world, to bring truth to the world, peace to the world, wisdom to the world, justice to the world. That's kindness. That's what it means to serve God. And so to live in service of God, you know, it's in this week's portion. It's a Vahayim Shema Tishmuel Mitzvotai Sher Nochi Mitzvotai Yom La'av Et Hashem Elokecha. And it shall be that it comes to pass that you do the commandments that I've commanded you to love God. In other words, the goal of commandments is to love God. And what does it mean to love God? All we know about God is God's attributes. And so loving God is loving truth and loving kindness and loving compassion and loving peace and loving justice. That's what it means to love God. And so a person who is not kind, then they don't love kindness and they don't serve kindness, and they're disconnected from God and they're not living their purpose.
So if I'm a person who more naturally is inclined to, like, the idea of being dishonest shocks me. How could I ever do such a thing? Then maybe I'm more naturally, or maybe the way I was brought up, I'm inclined towards emulating God in that way and living my life in accordance and in alignment. But when I, let's say I'm faced with a situation where it really is a struggle, you know, if I'm honest, I'm going to lose out. I'm not going to do as well. I may lose out on an opportunity. Is it worth it? Is it not? And then we will rationalize and justify why maybe it really is okay. But how do we work on our mindset to go to that first, you know, initial repulsion of, if this is the wrong thing, this isn't godly, how could I even think and contemplate acting in a way that is not in a godly way? Meaning we really have to almost sensitize ourselves to really be clear on what is godliness and what is not, because I think, again, the message of society so much pulls us away and makes us think certain things are okay when really they're not.
Well, we're here to choose good, not to simply be naturally good. Because animals are, you know, there's lots of naturally good, kind animals. They are a good-natured animal. Our goal is not to simply be a good-natured human being, but even when it's not our nature, we transcend our nature and choose to do good even when we don't feel like it. And so if a person doesn't feel like being kind, they shouldn't be surprised by that. That is really par for the course. We're here to choose kindness. If I always felt like doing kindness, then the kindness would be a robotic, automatic act. If I choose to do kindness, even when I don't feel like it, then I have really actualized what's extraordinary about the human being. Animals do what they feel. Human beings can choose to do what they don't feel because it's right. And that's what we're here to do, is to do right even when we don't feel like it.
That is really fascinating, and I actually think very encouraging, because I think sometimes we don't make the right choices because we're struggling and we're feeling bad about ourselves for even possibly struggling. Why should I be struggling with this? It would be nice if automatically I was doing the right thing. And yet what you're bringing out is that the fact that we're struggling is, it's like it's igniting our humanity, and that actually when I make the choice, have the struggle and make the choice, that choice is so much more significant in terms of even developing myself than when there is no struggle and the choice comes easy.
Right. Well, so, you know, so are we kind because we're really scared not to be kind? We're a rabbit, and a rabbit, you know, is too meek to really fight. So it's nice and it's easy to get along with only because it's scared. That's not a reason to be kind and nice because you're scared and weak. To be kind and nice is because you have the capacity to be a monster, but you choose not to be. And that's truly a virtuous human being. But a person that, you know, there are a lot of people that are very nice because they don't have the courage to not be nice. It's not because they really want to be nice. They're just afraid. But a person in our tradition should be powerful and have the ability to be mean, but choose not to. But a person who's afraid to be mean because somebody's going to hurt them. So in their hearts, they actually are mean. They're just afraid to act it out. In our tradition, you have a Yetzirah. You have an inclination towards doing the wrong thing. And that's human. And that's actually your asset, because without that, you would have simply been a robot. You would have simply been a meek rabbit that's afraid to be mean and cruel. You know, but if you're capable of being cruel, but you choose to be kind, wow, then you are truly a kind person, a human being that's kind.
You know, what's amazing, too, is I think so often we cut ourselves short because we just will say, well, this is just who I am. I'm just don't have patience, or I'm just a cutthroat competitive kind of person. This is just who I am. And that we stop there, as opposed to what you're saying is recognize we become who we are through the choices we make. And so therefore, instead of just saying, well, this is just who I am, if it's not who I want to be, what I need to do is think, what kind of person do I want to be? And then very consciously start learning and making choices of how to become that person.
Well, that's what's unique about human beings. We live in a tension between who I am and who I ought to be. And there is this clarity or this inclination that there's an ought to be. That makes me human. When I just simply say, this is who I am, and there is no ought to be, or there's an ought to be, but it's not possible for me. So, you know, there's this kind of attitude in Western culture is to be natural. And Judaism says, no, don't be natural. You know, animals are natural. Lions are natural. If you're naturally mean, don't be natural. be unnatural and choose to live the attributes of God into the world.
Because being natural is just almost like an autopilot state, as opposed to when you're saying don't be natural. It's this more conscious state of who, as I was saying, who do I want to be? And it's not maybe naturally who I am, or even if there are natural parts of me that are very good, I can't necessarily take credit for those, though it's the conscious choices that I'm making to become the person that I become that really determines who I am. When we return, Soul Talk, Rabbi David Aaron and Leora Mandel.
The Tamar Yonah Show.
Tamar, she's sassy.
She's smart.
She's funny.
But she's also a real Jewish mother.
Hi, everybody. I'm Tamar Yonah. And yes, I can be all of those things, but at Israel News Talk Radio, I'm here to bring you the news stories and guests that you may not hear anywhere else. Join me live on air Sundays, Mondays, and Tuesdays for the most unique and bold talk radio in Israel.
The Tamar Yonah Show.
The return of the Jewish people to the land of Israel was prophesied in the Bible thousands of years ago and is coming true today. Shalom. Join me, Josh Wander, on Israel Unplugged. Listen in as we delve into the spiritual and physical aspects of the Jewish return to Zion. We'll discuss the biblically mandated, historic, and of course practical understandings of this incredible transition from exile to redemption. That's Israel Unplugged, every Monday on IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com.
Psalm 23, the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. Did you know this psalm and many others were composed by a Jewish shepherd and musician who later became a king? Would you like to know some of the inner meanings of psalms to help you connect with God and strengthen your soul? An exciting and easy-to-read book is now available, which will help you do just that. Software for the Soul, Psalms for Everyone, available on Kindle, Audible, and Amazon.com. Software for the Soul.
Modesty at the beach? It isn't just about body image. It's about feeling good. Modest swimsuits, so we don't get burned by the sun.
So we won't get ogled by strangers.
So we'll feel free to express ourselves without the need to expose ourselves.
Let Marcy Modest help you to cover up what you want, how you want.
Made in Israel.
Visit MarcyModest.com. That's M-A-R-S-E-A Modest.com.
And get a 10% discount on your first purchase.
Two new shows on Israel News Talk Radio.
The return of the Jewish people to the land of Israel was prophesied in the Bible thousands of years ago and is coming true today. Shalom. Join me, Josh Wander, on Israel Unplugged. Listen in as we delve into the spiritual and physical aspects of the Jewish return to Zion. We'll discuss the biblically mandated, historic, and of course practical understandings of this incredible transition from exile to redemption. That's Israel Unplugged, every Monday on IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com.
How did a nice Jewish girl from Delaware end up living in Israel? Shalom, I'm Natalie Sapinski. Join me on my show, Returning Home. Meet different people who have moved to Israel. Hear their personal stories, their highs, their lows, and everything in between. Each week, we talk to experts on immigration and the process of moving to Israel. Listen to Returning Home every Thursday, only on Israel News Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome back to Soul Talk. Leora Mandel with Rabbi David Aaron talking about how to build character and specifically integrity, honesty, strong moral principles within ourselves. And what you're saying before the break is so powerful because I think so often, like if I say, you'd say, well, who am I? I would probably describe what I would call my more natural traits, the things I haven't necessarily worked on. And I might say, oh, I'm easygoing. I enjoy giving to other people. And that all may sound, that's very good. There's also maybe the natural traits that are a little bit less than, but in a sense, what you're sharing here is who I am are the things that don't necessarily come natural to me. It's the things I've had to work on. So if maybe naturally I'm sort of shy and easygoing, and that's very nice, you know, very flexible. But on the other hand, if I have to work, maybe my trait is I have to work on being a little bit more assertive in my life, that I have to take more action in my life. I have to put more effort into certain things. And when I do that, then that's really who I am, even more than the natural trait, so to speak, that I might more naturally, so to speak, describe myself as.
Exactly. That is what we've described as the difference between a human being and an animal. Animals are natural. and they go with their flow. A human being has the capacity to transcend his nature. I mean, this was really the flaw of what was idolatry in the pagan times. And Judaism is described as the antithesis of idolatry. There are even descriptions from our sages that Judaism came to uproot idolatry. Like, that was like its goal. And like, what? So what's wrong? You got a guy, he likes trees, he bows down to trees. What matters? He's a good guy. He's a nice guy. What's so terrible if he happens to have a little statue that he kisses and bows down to? Hey, it's a free world. You know, your theology is your theology just as long as you're ethical. No, it wasn't that. Idolatry was demonic, because as soon as you make nature God, you're basically saying that everything that's natural is good. And now you have turned evil into good, because if a lion's nature is to rip apart a lamb, then it's unethical for you to tell him to stop doing that, because nature is God and you're going against the will of God by going against nature. And so idolatry wasn't just simply a bunch of nice, good-hearted people that happened to have some theological, you know, mistake. No, their theological orientation was the foundation for the very basis of everything not ethical, which is really go with your flow, be natural, be yourself. And so, you know, I talked to a lion and said, you know, it's really not nice that you're ripping that poor little lamb. I remember I saw something on National Geographic's about seals, and it was one of the saddest thing I ever saw. You saw how these whales would attack these little baby seals, and they would actually play ball with the seals. They would take these seals and they would whip them across the sea towards, not across the entire sea, but, you know, to each other. And it was amazing. They were catching this poor little seal, torturing this little baby seal. And this was their game, and this was their nature. And you just saw evil. You saw cruelty. Now imagine we say to these whales, hey, you know, you got to go to church or to synagogue. You got to fix your ways. It's not nice. What would the whale say? He said, I'm just being the way God created me, and I'm living my nature, and you are telling me to go against my nature? You're evil. And so idolatry was the very foundation of making what we consider evil actually good. Go with your nature, no matter what that nature is, because nature is God, and living your nature is godly.
What you're sharing is so fascinating, because there's so many references and times the Torah talks about the importance of getting rid of idolatry. It's a theme that keeps on coming up. And because it's something that we think we just can't relate to because we just don't see it today, you know, in our culture and society, but the principle really still does exist. And it now also explains why idolatry was such a problem. It's not like God, so to speak, on an ego trip of, you don't serve any other God. Don't, you know, there is that aspect of, yes, it's important for us as human beings to connect to our Creator and not to waste so much of our life thinking that other forces in the world or parts of nature have any independent powers. That's also obviously important. But what you're sharing here, especially for today's day and age, to understand that these principles of idolatry still very much exist.
Yeah, I mean, basically, probably the greatest culture of idolatry was Nazi culture. When Hitler said we are barbarians and we should be proud of it, and it's just the Jews who have perpetrated this plot saying that man can transcend himself, that's a lie. That was really idolatry. Whether they were bowing down to trees or not, they were essentially embracing the ultimate implication of what idolatry really was. Idolatry equaled unethical behavior, worse than that, cruel, animal-like behavior. And that's why some of their idols were actually animals, because they aspire to be like animals.
But the danger, it takes on an even stronger shape, because I think when it's in this context of an ism, then it feels like you're serving something higher than yourself. You can rationalize more instead of someone just honestly saying, I'm just mean, I'm cruel. That's just who I want to be. It's saying, well, no, I'm serving a higher power through my cruelty, through my
service
of nature.
And I'm not mean, I'm not cruel. I'm just me. And I've been created this way, and I have an obligation to be true to my nature. You know, in one of the forms of idolatry was something called Kadesha. A Kadesha was a religious prostitute. It was a service. She was doing a service to be a prostitute. It was considered a holy service because she was serving the base nature of man. Mankind has this nature of unbridled sexual desire, and serving that was godly. Not curbing that and suggesting that he curb some of his nature and direct it in a holy matrimony. It was just allowing for it to, you know, and so there were orgies. It was a big part of their culture. It was just giving unbridled freedom to the most animalistic side of mankind and thinking that that's actually holy. That's good. And anybody that suggests not to do that is evil.
Wow. So my question is, bringing it back to our lives, which I think, again, it's making this so real, realizing that there's elements of this that definitely still exist today. It's still messages that surround us within society that we really have to sift through to make sure we're not integrating with it ourselves. But especially when it comes to the idea of being natural versus recognizing, no, I have to choose what's right. How does that work when it comes? I mean, where's the line drawn between there is this aspect of this is just who I am and I can't try to force myself to be different or feel different, meaning these are my feelings, as opposed to, but on the other hand, there is this aspect of, but we have an ability to make a choice. And sometimes we have to choose not to act certain ways, be certain ways, feel certain ways, etc. So how do we find today this kind of balance of, you know, again, we have to go against our nature. We don't want to be like animals, but at the same time, we still have to take our nature into account.
Okay. Well, so when it comes to nature versus mitzvah, nature versus the commandment of God, I go with the commandment of God. But if there is no issue here between my nature and the values of Torah, so I go with my nature. If a person is naturally an introvert, there's no mitzvah in the Torah, thou shalt be, you know, boisterous and loud and really out there. There's no mitzvah, so fine, just be natural. Because the Torah is not asking you to do something other. When the Torah says, you know, to do something, it's not telling you to be natural. It's telling you to achieve a higher nature. And that it's really your true nature to be kind. You and so you might have to conquer your cruel animal side in order to tap into a higher nature, which is your human side. So the goal is actually to eventually become natural, but divine natural, higher nature. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So when we're dealing with an area that has nothing to do with the values of the directives of Torah, so in there, they just leave it alone. Who says, you know, a person might not be naturally funny. So you don't have to transcend your unfunniness and try to be, if you want to try to be funny, fine, but it might be really unfunny, not funny. And so there is no mitzvah, thou shalt be a funny guy, you know? And so we have to make choices in the areas that we've been directed to make choices in other areas that we've not been directed, so then it's okay. Who says, you know, unless you want to, but you don't have to.
So what's really important, though, is that we really become more aware of what the Torah does tell us, meaning especially certain areas, like I'm thinking there's some emotional commands like lo tisna chicha belvavecha, do not hate your brother in your heart. And you may have someone you really honestly hate, and they maybe you feel like they're very deserving of our hate, and yet the Torah is telling us that you have to work on that. But we have to be aware of which are the areas that the Torah does tell us this is something you need to overcome nature and make a choice and try to change the way you're acting towards a person and feeling towards them. And whereas you're saying that, you know, you don't have to be a certain way. You can be yourself if you want, personally want to make that change, that's okay. But being aware is so important of where those areas are.
Well, it's important to understand that, you know, often people justify their behavior by saying, well, God created me this way. So how could he ask me to be other than the way he created me? So there's a story in the Talmud of the mother of Rav Nachman, who is one of the great sages of the Torah, and a stargazer, an astrologist, said to his mother that your son is being born with a zodiac that indicates that he is a thief, and he will naturally be a thief. And his mother said, no, that doesn't have to happen. And so his mother decided to put a hair covering on him to remind him that there's a power greater than himself, and he didn't steal. But one day, the wind blew the hair covering off, and he had this incredible urge to steal, which goes to show that, yes, a person could be created with a certain nature, and yet God will command you to transcend that.
Well, when we return, Soul Talk, Rabbi David Aaron and Leora Mandel.
In a time where feelings have become fact, where rational thought and common sense has disappeared, one man stands above it all.
I'm Howie Sobiker, your political hitman.
Political Hitman airs every Tuesday at 11:59 p.m. North American time, 7 a.m. Israeli time, only on Israel News Talk Radio.
Are you interested in transforming your life, drawing closer to the Creator, and uncovering the deeper meanings and hidden treasures in the Hebrew Bible?
Then join me, Rav Yitzhak Michelson.
And me, William Hall.
On The Science of Kabbalah, where we are seeking to narrow the gap between what we understand of our physical and spiritual worlds. So make sure to tune in every Tuesday at 5 p.m. Israel time, 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, here on Israel News Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome back to Soul Talk. Leora Mandel with Rabbi David Aaron. So I think a classic question that I feel every child is asked probably many times when they're growing up by well-intentioned family members and friends is, what do you want to be when you grow up? And usually they're thinking more like a teacher, a lawyer, a doctor, an accountant, an artist, whatever you may be saying. But the question we really have to ask ourselves, and even if we already are grown up, and the question we want to be really also instilling in our children is, what do I want to be when I grow up, or who do I want to be as I'm growing? And again, there's so much training for the professions that we have, but we really have to be saying, look, any profession we take on, we don't naturally know how to be a lawyer or be an accountant. Maybe I'm good at numbers. Maybe I naturally have a gift towards music or art, but I have to take lessons and I have to immerse myself into becoming a better artist. This is a question we really have to ask ourselves in terms of character, in terms of our moral standing, is who do I want to be? And what you're sharing here is that who I want to be is from choices I have to make and choose who I'm going to be, and that's so much more important than who I naturally am. That's why I'm realizing this question is so important that we ask ourselves this question, because it's a choice we make, just like any kind of profession we might go into, and then we really do have to immerse ourselves and learn in order to become more in line with who it is that we'd like to become.
Well, so that's the difference between what is my profession and what should be my passion. My passion should be to serve God. To serve God means to be a living channel for goodness in the world. And my profession is how I make money, and I can be very passionate about it. But first and foremost, I have to ask myself, am I serving God? Am I serving good? And sometimes a person will find a profession that they make money in a harmless way. They're not ripping anybody off, but they're not saving the world with this. But, you know, it's not really detracting, but it's not adding much at all. That's fine. This is how they make their money, right? But the question is, how do they live their meaning? And there's a difference between money and meaning. So there's two things a person should ask themselves. And even in their once they have their profession is also should be an opportunity to serve God. You know, a person could find themselves, you know, I don't know, maybe right now they need to make a little money and they're working as a waiter. And they're saying, what a waste of time. I wish I didn't have to do this. It's the only way I can be making money. But wait a second, you can serve God as a waiter. Not that he's going to show up in your restaurant, but because people are there, you could smile at them. You can ask them, how are you? You know, wherever we are, there's an opportunity to do good. And that means the same thing as an opportunity to serve God. It's the same. It's just a different way to say the same thing. And that's what should be on our minds, to do good. And sometimes the good is to gift the person with good advice, wisdom. Sometimes the good is to hand a person a $10 bill. Whatever that good is, sometimes that good is to fight evil. That's a big good, you know? But we're here to do good. Hmm. And we're not here to make a living. We're here to live a life. And of course we have to make a living. But what good is making money when you're not really living your highest good?
But that this perspective, it's about perspective, it really can transform anything that we have in our day. Even if we have a very exciting job, but then there's some more mundane kinds of things we have to take care of that we are just sort of not looking forward to. But if we're in this perspective of recognizing everything can be used to bring out goodliness and godliness, then even what could just seem like the mundane is transformed.
Right. Well, that's actually a verse in the Psalms, something we say every day, Ashrei Yoshvei Beitecha. Happy or deeply content are those who sit in your house. Now, what does it mean, those who sit in your house? Is it referring to the temple? If so, there is no temple, can't do that. Is it referring to the synagogue? Well, I can't sit there all day long. So what does it mean to sit in your house? One understanding is to realize that this world is the house of God. And wherever I am, I have this consciousness that I'm in the house of God. So where do I work? In the house of God. Where are you having this conversation? In the house of God. You know, and that will create a context of consciousness of, like, if you knew you were in the house, if you knew you were in the palace of the king, you would behave in a certain way that is, you know, in concert with being in the palace of the king. And so if I'm living in the house of God, then it means that my whole context of life is living in and accommodating goodness.
That really, that mindset and perspective really, I think, transforms every experience that we have. And going back to what we were saying about how we have to choose who we want to be as opposed to just say, this is just who I am naturally. When I couple that with the mindset, as you're saying, the perspective that everything I do in my daily life can have meaning, I'm living in the house of God, then I'm thinking, you know, if I'm choosing, say, I want to be a person who has more patience, that's the kind of person I'd like to be. Instead of saying, oh, I just don't have patience, because maybe that's how I defined myself for so many years. Now I'm going to choose to say, I'm a person who's working on having more patience. And then keeping in mind that I'm also in the house of God, then anytime there's something that challenges my patience, I think that's recognizing, wow, this is an opportunity for me to be more godly. Because if there was no Absolutely. Challenge of my patience, then I wouldn't have an opportunity to work on it, and then I'm not choosing it. I'm
that's
not
right.
choosing
I mean,
patience
what's
if nothing's trying my patience.
What do we have greater respect for? Someone who was just simply naturally patient and they're so chilled out, of course they're patient, or a person that is naturally impatient but really worked on that and has accomplished patience. I think we would have greater respect, and we would be in greater awe of a person who worked on it than a person who just lived it naturally. And so a person should never see their problems as a problem. Their problem is actually an asset. That difficulty is precisely your opportunity to demonstrate the power of choice and achieve true greatness.
You know, it is so true. I'm thinking of a biography I read of a really great woman. And the author was very smart. This was written after the person had already passed away. And she wrote about the woman as a child had a very short fuse, and wrote of even examples of her temper. And then you read the rest of the book and you're just absolutely in awe of how unbelievably patient and kind and compassionate this woman was. And it just almost seems like I could never be that way. But because of the introduction showing what this person was like as a child, that they did have a short fuse, it makes me realize, and all of us realize, it was powerful. Sometimes we just dismiss, oh, this person just seems to have been born with natural patience. And then they built it up from there. No wonder why they were so unbelievably, you know, compassionate and patient, like a real tzaddiket. But on the other hand, when we're realizing there's this benefit to realizing, right, everyone has, we all have a mix of traits. And maybe in one trait, a person maybe starts out with something a bit more naturally in positive direction. There's always what to build on. But there's always something we're going to have that starts at a very raw place. But it's up to us what we're going to do with it. But I think what's so powerful about our conversation here is recognizing that it's not about who naturally, what traits I have, what personality traits I have. It's I have to, whatever stage of life I'm at, whether I'm younger, I'm midlife, older, choose who do I want to be. And work on that, and that will be my crowning glory.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's, you know, I enjoy reading biographies or books of people who I would call great people, people who are inspirational, that are the ones who do make this choice. And it is true. It's interesting. It's specifically sometimes you read the stories like the rags to riches is much more impressive than the person who was brought up with a silver spoon and continued on with wealth. And same thing sometimes even in personality and moral traits. There's something very powerful about reading about somebody who it doesn't seem as though they started out as this angelic perfect being. But as you're reading the biography, you're realizing this is a person who really chose to develop themselves. And I'm sure it's because of what you're sharing. It's not, you know, who I naturally am, I can't necessarily take credit for. It's just that's like my starting point. It's what I do with that raw material, those raw ingredients, that really determines who I am.
Absolutely. And it goes back to the power of choice. And very often people they don't realize that we've come to this world to make good choices. I think, you know, the other day it hit me, like a lot of people are, you know, having a very hard time. And I'm hearing about friends of mine getting corona, and it's very disturbing and challenging and sad. And the obvious question is, well, didn't God, you know, create the world for us to have a good life? But so many people don't seem to have a good life. And I realized, no, God did not create the world for you to have a good life. God created the world for you to choose a good life. And to choose a good life, especially when you're not having one, that's so good. Mm. And if you could, you know, if you could be in a situation that's challenging and look at it and say, there's an opportunity here, and I'm going to choose to make the best of the worst. Wow. Then you are truly great.
And it is interesting because, again, I think these are the people that I also see as great people who you could see all odds against them or real major challenges. And you can it would be understandable if they would just sort of shut down. And yet when you see these are what we call inspirational people. And the point is we can become inspirational to ourselves, too, whether we're going through a very big challenge or even if we're not going through some major challenge at the moment. The point is we can sometimes God will send us challenges and sometimes we also choose a challenge. Like if I want to become a person who's more giving. And that's the giving challenge that I'm taking on. Maybe more naturally, I'm not really interested in being so giving. I'm comfortable reading a book instead of going out to try to help somebody. But I'm going to now say, but I want to be a more giving person. So when an opportunity comes up, when it seems like someone might need some help, I want to be the first one to respond. I want to even maybe initiate giving to others and look for it. Then I'm also a great person and I'm challenging myself to become a greater version of myself, the better version of who I can be.
Exactly.
And this really is the road to building character. The road to building integrity is, again, through the choices that we make. And Rabbi, I really want to thank you because I think for all of us listening, so much of what we're it's homework, it's life work of really giving deeper thought into who am I now and who would I like to become and seeing a vision of who I can be. Because even if I'm in a good place, I can be greater, but I have to recognize that it takes vision of saying this is the kind of person I'd like to become and then starting to make those choices towards becoming the greater person that I is within me, that I want to manifest. I want to thank you all for joining us. Soul Talk, Rabbi David Aaron and Leora Mandel.
Where can you get the inside news on Israel? At Israel News Talk Radio, we're dedicated to sharing Israel's inside story with the world by providing our listeners with news on Israeli politics, current affairs, and Israeli Jewish culture. The Israel News Talk Radio homepage also provides you, the listener, with useful information at your fingertips, with scrolling news headlines, weather, currency exchange, Shabbat candlelighting times, and so much more. Our radio programming is always accessible and on demand. We operate absolutely free of charge for everyone, everywhere. If you love what we do, partner with us now by becoming an Israel News Talk Radio supporter. With your support, you'll be inscribed on our Israel News Talk Radio Wall of Fame. There's nothing like us in the world. Be part of something great. Israel News Talk Radio, straight talk from Israel.
Howdy, this is Rita from League City, Texas, now living in Israel. And though my heart may have belonged to Texas, it now belongs to Israel and all the fantastic show hosts at Israel News Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Michael Solomon from Kiryat Arba, Israel. And why do I love listening to Israel News Talk Radio? Because I love listening to the interesting interviews they do and their news reporting that most other media sources don't cover.
Hey, this is Nicole Eko from Malmo, Sweden. It gets pretty cold here in Sweden, so I love cuddling up with a warm cup of tea while I listen to Israel News Talk Radio.
Hey, everybody, this is Frank Karras from Tennessee. Me and my dog Buster really love listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
News, opinion, and more. You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.